to Minority Corner, where we take an introspective look at the world through an intersectional lens. I'm James, he, him, his. I'm a queer, political, actor, activist, comedian, Cancerian, self-proclaimed, sexy blurred. That's a black nerd. And each week, I'm joined in the corner by another fabulous minority where we tackle the news, pop culture, politics, media, history, and more, all with a little self-care and self-love sprinkled throughout.
Okay, so the Democratic National Convention happened last week, and we've got Ben Randall here, our Minority Corner political analyst, to help us break it all down. We have our thoughts on Republicans speaking at the convention. Was there drama between the Democrats behind the scenes of the Democratic Convention, or was that something the media was making up? We take a look at everything that was discussed, the ideas, the points, the speeches that moved us, the ones that inspired us, Michelle Obama, and our strategies for moving forward, how to be inspired by what happened at the DNC, and our calls to action. We break down party politics, the history behind some of the past conventions, learning lessons from 2016, like I said, managing our election anxieties, and a whole bunch of metaphors for interpreting American democracy. Oh, there's a lot of them coming your way. And we talk about those hosts that brought it of the DNC, the comedy of Julie Louise Dreyfus to the urgency of Kerry Washington, Olivia Popeing it up. And then also we've got some choice words for white cynicism. Our eyes can't roll hard enough. All this and so much more on a very special Minority Corner DNC 2020 with Ben Randall. Let's go. Ben Randall, our political expert. I know I've dubbed you our political expert correspondent here.
Love
at Minority Corner. So, because last time you were here, you were helping us to filter through the impeachment. You and I sat through and watched the impeachment so other people didn't have to, because we thought a lot of things were going on back then.
I mean, that was like 1907, wasn't it, right? Or was that just 8 months ago?
Ben Randall, so much has happened. It wasn't even a full fucking year ago. I don't even think a year ago that we had even heard, the kerfuffle hadn't even started to bubble up about Ukraine yet.
No, not even a year ago. No, that was happening, I think, in November.
September, October, November.
Totally. It happened pretty fast.
So fast forward, we just had the DNC last week, and a historic one for many reasons.
Yes, absolutely.
And it's just interesting because, like, I remember you and I were so, because I love the DNC. I have been watching religiously since 2004.
Yeah.
And I always watch the C-SPAN version because otherwise, like, if you're watching MSNBC, there's someone, they're like, oh, we're going to talk over someone's talking.
Yes.
But here's our interpretation of what they're saying. It's like,
exactly. We don't have to listen to Martha Fudge. Anyway, so. And we're like, maybe I want to listen to...
Maybe I do. I want to listen to Martha Fudge. I started to watch MSNBC for 2 seconds on this one, and then Rachel Maddow was cutting into some video. I'm like, Rachel Maddow, I love you, but I did not come here for you. So I went to the official DNC channel to get all the videos, all the songs. I will say that theme, if I heard that theme song one more time, I was going to rip my hair out.
Yeah. At least it's not fight song.
That's true. Oh, man. Because the first time there's the DNC, like it's sort of this country twang song. The first time I heard it, I was like, yes, this is good. But then they played it like after every video segment, every time someone talked, I'm like, okay, we need a new song.
Yes. Yeah, first of all, I feel like something that would be good for this whole discussion is not to lean too heavy into theatrical criticism, but I will say that I was tremendously impressed with how smoothly it went.
Yes.
Which, if people know, like, live anything, let alone live television, live entertainment of any kind, the fact that it went off without a hitch is remarkable. And
totally.
I think overall, the fact that it actually stumbled upon, or I should say stumbled because they intentionally did it, created segments that were better. than the in-live convention is. That's really remarkable. It wasn't just like a, you know, like it was so much of the Zoom virtual theater we see and things like that, where it's really a pale imitation of what either film or, say, theater is or something. It wasn't always perfect, but it, like the fact that it made breakthroughs in any way and some segments were better than they are in the hall, I think is really a huge testament.
And met the moment, and just by the sheer fact that they're having to do it all digitally in this Zoom space also was this meta experience of like a constant reminder of why we're having to do this.
Is
calling attention to the failure of our current administration.
I think that's exactly right. The fact that that we're having a virtual convention, and the fact that they didn't try to stretch or break those rules was on message, because it is serious. This is happening. It's not a hoax.
Yeah.
And you're going to see, I think, at the RNC next this week, you're going to see them try to flout that as much as possible. They're probably going to have in-person audiences and things like that, because they're going to want to pretend this isn't happening and that this is all some minor inconvenience with 170,000 people dead and millions out of work. Just some like hiccup on the road to the
making
the,
America great again. Are we great yet? Did that happen? Lord. Okay, so let's jump into night one, and camera opens and I spy with my little eye Eva Longoria hosting the DNC. Already I'm like, I'm in love. I'm here for this.
It took me a minute. The first night it took me a minute to get used to
getting to the rhythm.
A host. It just the rhythm was interesting. I thought times like just go into the next person or whatnot. But
I have a love for celebrities, especially, and Eva Longoria is not random that she's there. She's not like, in fact, again, the first DNC that I saw, Eva Longoria on the first day was there giving. She's been part of the Democratic National Committee for
and also as activism. She's been working with Latinx organizations, and she's been doing the work. She didn't just show up and like make a cameo, which would have been fine too. But she definitely has been doing the work for decades.
And she's the one that got, I say this quote every so often, but she reminds folks that her family didn't cross the border crossed them. Like they've been there. They were in Texas back when it was Mexico. Like, so she's been politically active. And I like the form. I think again, takeaways for moving into the next convention, assuming we're able to have one, because like, you know, we might not be able to have an election. And I say that not lightheartedly, but like this could be like the alarm bells are ringing. And I think
Donald Trump wins, we should not be assuming there's going to be a 2024.
Right. Like, exactly. Like
that needs to be stated flatly for people going, whatever, I guess I'll vote for Biden. I guess, you know, I'll just wait for the next round. Like Maya Angelou said, when someone tells you who they are, believe them the first time.
Right.
He's making it loud and clear that he is not interested in putting himself up for a vote for the people.
Right.
And
I do appreciate too, because that has been circulating in my head since I saw Michael Moore's documentary Fahrenheit 11/9 when it came out. And Michael Moore again he predicted that Donald Trump was going to win back in July of 2016. He put out an article and he said, "Here's the five reasons that Donald Trump was going to win," and he was right on every single account. And I'm like, "Listen to Cassandra. Listen to he's that so ravening right now."
Yeah.
And so I was taking that seriously. And so I appreciated that the DNC was also not holding any punches and stating that this could be the, it was loud and clear there at the election. They were stating that. So I guess my thing that I'm saying is like, if assuming that we win and we're able to have another convention in 4 years, I really like that it was compacted into 2 hours. Mm-hmm. The speeches were shorter. You got to see videos from more Americans that were just everyday citizens. I thought that was really lovely.
I think so too. I think the 2 hour format is fantastic. I think I also think there's something to be said for speeches that were shorter.
Yes. Why do we? I'm like, oh my God, speeches used to go on and on.
Yeah, I mean, we'll
on.
Get to this later when we talk about Biden, for instance, but Biden spoke for 25 minutes.
Right.
That is literally half the length of what Actually, Hillary Clinton spoke for 65 minutes.
Yeah,
56?
Yeah.
Maybe I'm being dyslexic about that number.
It was 56. And then yes. Barack Obama spoke for 48. Still, yes. Like, coming in well under time. Said what he needed to say and got out. It was powerful. We'll get to it. But, yes, I totally agree. And, you know, there was some, and I think, you know, we'll get into this with when we speak about certain, mm-hmm. I'll just put this in there. So we had Republicans who were speaking there as well. And it's interesting, like, I think I would like to remind people of, like, this has been my motto, like, know it for yourself, which is what my grandmother used to say, know it for yourself. And what I mean by that is that, like, people were already in, we have to be careful because the media was, like, trying to create so much drama, and there wasn't. There was honestly, behind the scenes, no drama. It's a very united party. And so they were like, oh, like, this Republican's going to be speaking at the convention. In reality, this person had like a 5-second clip or a 60-second clip. Like it wasn't that, you know, for the most part, there were some people who were given, you know, a 5-minute speech or whatnot, but they're trying to make it seem like Republicans were, you know, taking over the convention. And it's like, hold on, let's wait and see what it actually is first. Okay, it was just 60 seconds of like Meg Whitmore or whatever, mm-hmm. or a 5-minute thing from, you know, Colin Powell. And the second thing is like, look at it this way. We're not changing our party platform to meet them. Yes. They're having to sacrifice the things that they really like, you know, if they believe in, you know, if they're pro-life, they're sacrificing that idea to come meet us. We're not changing.
Look at the platform. Look at the, it's the most progressive platform in the history of the Democratic Party. And if they want to sign on to it and endorse that ticket in this platform, welcome.
Yeah.
Elections are about addition, not subtraction.
Right. Yeah.
Addition, not subtraction. So if you want to join, come join. And the fact is, no one actually thinks that Trump is going to win the popular vote. Trump does not think he's going to win the popular vote, and they're not trying to. He's not trying to win over people. He's trying to get his base out. He's trying and then try to scare enough votes, say, in the suburbs. So it's important to know and remember that the Republican swing voter or the independent, there's a thing as independents, but independents usually vote in the one party every time. They just don't want to label themselves that party. But you can win independents that may be swing voters or are leaning Republican. And frankly, we need them for the Electoral College.
Yeah.
We need them. We can't write them off and go, we don't need you. We're going to be only progressives in this party. That is actually not a winnable strategy. And like, remember in 2008, Obama won Indiana. Obama won Iowa. Hey, guess what? He won that with some probably right-leaning white people. Mm-hmm. And he didn't he didn't go, I don't need your votes. I got the youth. Bye. Yeah. He didn't do that because he was like, I need that vote. Yeah. I need every single vote. Because I also know that it also elects the senator of that state. And it also elects all these down-ballot races. We need that. There's a reason why we had a supermajority in 2008 in the Senate of 60 senators. We're not going to get there now. But we certainly are not going to get there with an attitude of we don't want your moderate votes. You.
Yeah. Nope.
It's not how you win elections, folks.
And I'm going to be completely honest with this convention. I didn't realize how scared and terrified I was until, you know, watching this convention and how much hope it actually did give me.
Yep.
And personally, you have to pick and choose your battles. And when you can find an ally, you find an ally. Even if, you know, it's again, there's that quote that, you know, elections are not marriages. They're just bus rides.
Mm-hmm.
And we're just looking for, and some of us are, we're all trying to get out of fascist town and we're all trying to get on the same bus if we can. And to find the unification where we can, like, there's enough people to fight. If there's someone who's saying, hey, I'm going to put down my weapon and we're going to link up, let's take that. And that's, you know, part of how this democracy sort of works. And we're not going to be able to do it all on our own. So listen, if Kasich and Powell and Cindy McCain want to come on over here and they're going to bring some of those people over here, why not? We're not changing our platform.
Yep.
Like you pointed out, the most progressive platform to date. And it was Sanders worked on it. Warren's worked on it. So it's sort of like, I think, we have to set our own sort of egos aside of who we wanted to be the mouth speaker of the party. And okay, it's Biden, whatever. This is a democracy, right? Don't we all agree that we are part of a democracy? Biden won. That wasn't my he won. That's what happened. That's how democracies work.
I was going to say this later because when we got to President Obama, and I know we're still on the first night, and I want to be sure.
True.
But I want to mention this because of what you just said, was that Obama said democracy is not transactional.
Yeah.
And this is the hugest, hugest point that I feel like I'm having lots of discussions with people now about, is people even say, like, oh, he wasn't my candidate. And I go, okay, well, I don't know. We're August. It's August. Right. We're not in the primary. No. Right now, we're in a general. And since democracy is not transactional, by that he means that it's not, I'm going to do this thing, you give me your vote, now then you go away, and I will come back to you 4 years later. It is not a transaction. It's not, I'm buying this good, I'm paying you $5, now go away. Mm-hmm. It is you are choosing the person to go into the room and vote on your behalf, or right. do something on your behalf. Now, we have two choices right now, Trump or Biden. Who is the person that's going to go in the room and act on your behalf? And then once they get in that room, you push them like fucking hell to do what you want them to do. It's that classic Obama is a saying of democracy is not a spectator sport.
Yes, those are totally.
Both, it's the same thing as it's not a transaction. Yeah. It's not, I give you my vote, no, I go away. And so that's why it's kind of irrelevant whether or not Biden was our first choice. Is like, well, the primary is over, so we're not even, that discussion's over.
Yeah.
We're now on, like, our choice is Biden or Trump, and who is the person that we can lean on to go in that room and make the choices for us?
Yeah. That which one can Biden. I, which one can I push, right?
Correct.
Again,
correct.
And I remind people too, again, I voted for Obama, who was not openly supporting my right to get married, but I still voted for him.
It's not transactional.
Because I'm not trying to go for all or nothing. And you know, too, something that's really come up to me is just, I hope that this is our wake-up call to remember that democracy is a full-time, it's a full-time position. Like, we are all active members as part of our democracy, and we have to actively, because I will say, like, I think that I left Obama hanging. I do not know for sure if I voted in the 2010 mm-hmm. midterms. And I think a lot of us forgot to still, like, participate. Mm-hmm. We were looking for these savior candidates. And people are like, oh, Obama didn't get anything done. We didn't have his back.
Correct.
We left him hanging for Trey.
Also, do not forget that even just, like, we lost our supermajority in the Senate, which is one of the reasons why the ACA got watered down, was because we lost that Massachusetts seat that eventually went to Warren. Well, when Ted Kennedy passed, it was a special election, and we lost it to a Republican. And then we went from 60 to 59 votes in the Senate. Where the hell were Democrats? So, that's an example of, like, you're exactly right, and we all own that. And it's only important to remember that even in this moment, our job is not to pick a dream person, to fall in love, to love everything they're going to do. Because even if you did, you're delusional if thinking that they're going to do everything you want them to do.
Because that's what the other side is doing.
Correct.
That's where they live. And instead, we have to remember, again, we're not looking for savior candidates. Who can I work with? Who can I push for? And we keep working at it. This is a lifelong commitment. I think we got a little too comfortable with our Netflixes and, you know, guilty as well. But, like, knowing that, okay, I'm an active participant and this is part of my job to be aware, to vote, to, you know, be an active participant. Going to a highlight, there's two highlights. With night one, Kristen Akiza, that video, her father who died, got COVID, believed it was a hoax because that's what the Trump administration was saying, voted for Trump. And she said that his only pre-existing condition was trusting Donald Trump.
Yep.
Woof.
That I think is the message we need to be taking into the fall, is that this man completely mishandled this pandemic. He did not cause it. But he was asleep on the watch, denying it. He was pretending it was going to go away because he felt that to acknowledge it would make him look bad.
Right.
And so, meanwhile, look where we are now.
Yeah.
So I think she's right. That was really powerful having her say that.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's another powerful moment, because I've been getting lost in the numbers. The numbers are so high that my brain doesn't compute how many people have died. And getting emotional just thinking about this. But seeing the names and the faces of people who died, there was a video montage, and seeing the people, the human beings behind it. And you're like, it didn't have to. The pandemic was going to hit, but it didn't have to hit as bad as it did, and the lack of response, and that they're still behind and responding to it. And I thought that was just a very powerful piece of seeing the names and the
faces.
Can
I also point out, on that note, it was really powerful on multiple points during this convention to finally be allowed to grieve and honor the fact that we've lost 170,000 Americans. Mm-hmm. And the fact that the Republican Party and the Trump White House, their response was, it was a dour and depressing convention. Oh, and I went, people are dead.
This is the times that we're in.
I'm sorry. I don't remember after 9/11 being like, I don't know, this coverage is kind of downbeat.
Yeah.
Can we have a parade about this, please?
Can we be proud of America? Like,
where's my party?
God.
People are dead.
Yeah.
So and that was 3,000 people. This is 170,000 mm-hmm. people. We're losing 1,000 to 1,200 people a day. So it was actually so appropriate, you're right, yeah. to like finally get to grief.
Yeah. And I think one message too, because they are able to, throughout the DNC, to be able to show this is what we're dealing with. And this is actually how a Biden presidency specifically would be able to handle and tackle that. I thought they did some really good yeah. stuff with, I like the little quick little virtual town halls that he did with, again, just Americans. Like, I felt like we as Americans got to participate so much more in this
yes.
than ever before. Yes. And I think take notes moving into the future, because it really, I feel like there was a message throughout us taking ownership of our democracy, us being active yeah. Participants in that.
Yeah, I completely agree. I think it happened throughout. I know we'll get to it later, but the roll call as well. I think all of those things, I think, were really powerful improvements.
Yeah. Michelle Obama.
Oh, Michelle Obama. I think she is like the heart and voice of the Democratic Party yeah. in a way that is only possible because she hates politics.
Yes.
Stop asking her to run for president. She's
thank
not going
you.
To.
Can we so like, she, stop asking?
She hates
yes.
it. She hates
you read
it.
Her book or listen to her podcast, right? Like, she doesn't want to run. Stop getting her to run. And again, stop looking for savior politicians. You
correct.
Go run for office. Like,
you go run.
Michelle Obama, I love her, but I love her. And she hasn't done anything or isn't doing anything that none of y'all can't do in whatever avenue correct. Or medium it is. She has tapped into what her gift is. She has answered her calling. And we all have those. So we all just need to be inspired by her journey.
Correct. That's exactly right. Also, that's what you just nailed it. I think that what she does is she actually is not speaking to you as a politician mm-hmm. who needs to, if they're a politician, they're kind of doing active, like, you know, grab and tackle. I don't know why I'm using football terms, but because I think I just misused them, she's not usually a politician has to use, like, you know, stick on message, hit these 4 points because they're working.
Right.
And they have to get an agenda across. Right. She's talking to you as like citizen number one.
Yeah.
She's talking to you as a citizen right. and going, as a citizen, not as a politician, because I hate that nonsense. Mm-hmm. I'm telling you how I feel about this and how it makes me both, how I'm processing this grief and this frustration and what I think we all need to do and the how we need each need to answer the call.
Mm-hmm.
So she's speaking to you from a fellow citizen, which I think is her power yeah. when she says he cannot be the president we need him to be.
It is what it is.
It is what it is. She's saying to you, like, I'm human to human.
But
like, I'm not going to do it. I'm not saying I'm going to do it. But like, let's be real here. He can't
do
this.
He can't
do
it. And I loved using his line of it is what it is against. Mm-hmm. And again, like, it's so, that should be enough. That is, I mean, again, what's the breaking point? Like, can we just go ahead and vote already? All these American societies said it is what it is. Like, that's not who you want as your leader.
Well, remember in 2012 when Republicans were so angry that their whole message of the convention was built in response to Obama saying, you didn't build that, referring to corporations and things and kind of implying that the government had a hand in that. And the whole GOP convention was, yes, we did build that. And it was really reactionary and weird. But it was because it was like, no, you didn't build the roads.
Right.
Like, no, you.
But that
your goods are being sent by a post office that's being paid for. Like, what are you talking about? So, but then can we contrast that with so Obama saying the government has helped you in your corporate success, and so you owe a part to the government to pay it back to its citizens who paid for that help. Can we contrast that then with a president saying about 100 at that time 150,000 Americans dead? It is what it is.
Right. Those are very, and again, like, it's like, I look forward to the day when I can get back to like debating the issues with an actual Republican Party. Cause this is yeah. just fat. This is a cult fascism. Like they're,
yeah.
it's not even in a reality where there's not even issues to debate. Yeah. There's not.
We heard today that they didn't vote on a platform. They literally decided not to vote on a platform.
Are you kidding me?
But to say our platform is whatever Trump wants it to be. That's a cult.
Hello.
This is now a cult.
Get out.
You don't stand for anything, which by the way, they did that because if they put anything in that platform, Trump would have to be asked about it. And then Trump would probably disown it.
Right.
And then they'd be a mess
yeah.
as always. So that's why they couldn't actually have principles because he has no principles. So they have to just be a cult.
I'm watching Leah Remini's Scientology documentary series on A&E. I can't get enough of it. And the similarities are there. So, ugh. But I did love Michelle Obama's. It just had that fireside chat. She wasn't at a podium because she's not a politician. And also, too, it's like, she has so much more power as a private citizen. She doesn't have to try to, like, push an agenda through, get votes for a bill. Like, she's fine where she is, and we can get involved. She's already done her fair share, and so she keeps stepping up and doing it. So
she did her service. It's time for us to do ours.
Okay, night two, revving up. Right. Tracy Ellis Ross steps up to the plate. I do want to say sidebar. After I saw Eva Longoria, the DNC apparently like put out a list of who the hosts were. I didn't know.
I never saw it either.
A surprise to me. So I will
every
say,
night I was like, oh, hi.
The moment Eva Longoria was there, because I know she's friends with Kerry Washington, and Kerry Washington is heavily active in the DNC as well. Mm-hmm. I was like, oh, I bet Kerry Washington is going to host. And in fact, check my Facebook. I predicted it. I said, oh, I bet we're going to see Kerry Washington on night three. And she showed up, and Olivia Pope was there. So, sidebar, I just want to say I that so ravened it. Yes. Cassandra, I was like, let me predict.
Cassandra all over the place.
So we had our 17, instead of one person doing the keynote, there were 17 young, diverse group of up-and-coming young Democrat leaders.
Now, I've heard some criticism about this, and I hear it because there was an element to it that felt scripted as like one speech as opposed to like each person getting their own slot. But that gets really tricky just because the convention was 2 hours long every night. It wasn't the normal length of a convention, which would literally be like 10 hours a day. Yeah. I think it's like eight hours or something of actual speakers. And then the prime time is just the heavy hitters at night, blah, blah, blah. But I feel like this was the way to get the rising stars in there. Yeah. Because I agree that I would love to have seen more from them, but we couldn't give them each 5 minutes.
Yeah.
And the way that party politics works are the young stars are given a prime speaking slot.
Right.
Like Obama, everyone's like, Obama, I just want to go over the forum. Like, yeah, he was the only one.
Yeah, that was it.
He was the only young rising star who gave that one speech. The rest, if you go back to 2004, the rest of those people in primetime were the old guard. Yeah. It's always the old guard. Right. That's how, because people... It's like any organization. The ones who put in the decades of work are the ones who are like, I earned this spot. Mm-hmm. I'm going to speak.
Yeah.
And you're not going to take my slot away from me.
Yeah. Well, and to I thought that it was really inspiring. And I think we're starting to see a shift because there are more young, I won't even say younger, because there's like a chicken farmer in Maine who is, you know, a congressperson. Yeah. So I think what we're seeing is a more active participation across the party. And for me, it was inspiring because I was like, I want to be one of those people. I think a lot of people are starting to say, like, I'm inspired by the story of, you know, AOC or that guy and the people who've been winning in their primaries. And so, and we got to see more of those voices as opposed to just Stacey Abrams. I thought that was really, and I think I was okay because it was one speech, one message, and everyone getting their time and moment to shine, because this is the future of the party. And again, they're not doing anything that you and I and everybody who's listening can't also be doing.
Correct.
I would say at this point, I started getting, this is where I'm going to coach me through this, Ben. My anxiety started to roll. I loved night one. I'm having a great time. I'm seeing these speeches. I'm hearing the stories about Joe Biden, why he is the right person to meet the moment. And then I start getting 2004 feels and hopes that I had watching the DNC 2004. Mm. They're telling the story about John Kerry. We seem so united. It seemed like such an obvious choice to vote in Kerry because we're in this war of Iraq. It's going in the wrong direction. There were no weapons of mass destruction, and I had that hope, and I'm feeling that hope again, and then I get scared.
Well, that just means we need to get to work.
True. Okay.
And that means
see?
Exactly.
That's why Ben Randall's here. He's like, great, get to work.
get to work. I mean, there is no between now, and we're going to get to talk about this a lot later, between now and Election Day, we all have work to
Everybody,
do.
Yeah.
So it's tempting to jump on a 538 and be like, what are their chances? What's going to happen? They're just telling you what the polls are telling them.
Yeah.
That's all they're saying is where the snapshot of the race was 4 days ago.
Right. And what people said, right? Like I'm listening to this I'm listening to Slow Burn about David Duke. Fascinating.
Yeah.
Because the parallels between David Duke and Donald Trump are so similar. Only difference was David Duke didn't come from all these millions of dollars to be able to amplify his voice. And where, again, people didn't think that he was going to win his seat that he ended up winning because the polls were saying one thing, but people didn't want to actively admit that they were going to be voting for a white supremacist.
Yeah, but the hidden Trump voter is actually not is a myth. Mm. There's actually no data of the hidden Trump voter. I feel like he needs to lose so that we can put this rumor to bed. I feel like because then we'll look at 2016 for what it was, which was a close race where a party was seeking a third term, and so it was never going to be a blowout race. It was always going to be close because those third terms are so rare. And then he outperformed his polls that night. Outperformed meaning within the margin of error.
Right. Yeah.
That win was within Nate Silver had him at a one-third chance. Yeah. 1 in 3.
Yeah.
That's not that terrible of a shot. So while some people I think have their prediction markets, like New York Times or something like way off, like a 90%, even 1 in 10.
Yeah.
1 in 10 things happen, y'all.
Yeah.
So that's not 100%.
Right. And
that feels like a high number, but all it means is that he outperformed his polls by like 1%.
Right.
Or that means 1% of Clinton voters stayed home because they thought she was going to win.
Right.
That's actually not that much of a fluke. It's not actually the crazy anomaly that everyone still treats it as. It just was an upset. So point is, work.
Right. No, totally. And two, because like, again, speaking of all the work that needs to be done, again, we were an uphill battle against fucking James Comey, which like, fuck this guy till this day. Like, man, he's got one of the worst footnotes in history. Like, you know, fuck you, James Comey. And then also to like, you know, Russia and just like, so it was a blitzkrieg of terrible things that could go awry and that ended up happening. And again, she did win the popular vote, but you know, so there was that. Jacqueline, I'm going to get her last name wrong. Asby, the elevator operator who nominated Joe Biden.
Love it.
I'm done. Like, my heartstrings were pulled in so many, you know, different directions. And again, the contrast, like, he's just being nominated by an everyday citizen. She was a black woman. She was able to speak to the character of who she felt Joe Biden was in the moment she met him. You know, it just was speaking, I think, to the heart of what this convention was. It was like it was Americans, and that's what it's supposed to be. It's us, you know, involved in our democracy and participating.
Yeah.
And what I also love is that if you remember, she was the New York Times elevator operator. She'd taken that photo there was that photo or video with Joe Biden, and she's like, I love you, you're great. And it just was such a genuine moment between the two. But also to come out, she also did not necessarily endorse him for the primary. But the fact that like she can still come here to this moment and she still loved him even then. She hadn't necessarily come out and endorsed him for the primary, but she still loved him and still coming together to nominate him. And I think like that's just a great example of us being able to unite and come together as a party, you know?
I completely agree. I think it was a beautiful moment, and I think it's one of those many examples of a convention featuring Americans. I thought that was beautiful.
And then that got us into the roll call, which was just so amazing. Definitely a highlight. So beautiful. The roll call usually is just so not that exciting, but to go visually to all these different parts of America and see all these different groups of people that make up what it means to be America. We're so diverse, and seeing all the different states and the territories, and again, having just everyday citizens participating in this process, getting to throw up their delegation votes and for Biden and for Sanders, as they still got some as per rules and protocol. But take note, this is the way to do the roll call from here on out. And it made me oddly, incredibly patriotic. The whole entire DNC in general may be very patriotic and miss people from the vast swaths of this country, and also go buy some Rhode Island calamari.
Schmanners. Noun. Definition. Rules of etiquette designed not to judge others, but rather to guide ourselves through everyday social situations.
Hello, Internet. I'm your husband, host Travis McElroy.
And I'm your wife, host Teresa McElroy.
Every week on Schmanners, we take a look at a topic that has to do with society or manners. We talk about the history of it. We take a look at how it applies to everyday life. And we take some of your questions. And sometimes we do a biography about a really cool person that had an impact on how we view etiquette. So join us every Friday and listen to Schmanners on MaximumFun.org or wherever podcasts are found.
Manners, schmanners. Get it?
Well, first I want to say, like, journalists, do your job. Again, they were trying to create drama when, like, AOC, her part was to second the nomination of Bernie Sanders. Bernie Sanders, this convention rules, he had gotten enough of delegate votes to be able to be nominated. He wasn't, he'd already, we knew who was going to be. There was no surprises here. This was just part of the ritual of the DNC, and they wanted to make a big kerfuffle because in her 60-second or 90-second speech that she was able to give, it was seconding the motion to nominate Bernie Sanders, and they tried to, like, make it as if, like, this coup or this thing was happening, and that wasn't the case.
Yes, not at all. I mean, exactly. That was a ginned up drama, probably created fully by journalists and Twitter.
Yeah. I will say that does go to my other point that I think that the DNC probably could have given AOC either something else to do throughout the convention. She is a rising star. I think it would have been great to have heard more from her. A video with her and the squad, like, there was a missed opportunity, I think, to have. There were, and again, I'm fine with the Republicans speaking because we're a big tent. And the idea is unifying against the fascist threat that there is. I do think there was a missed opportunity to have, like, there was no Muslim speakers at the convention. There was other Latinx people were like, oh, AOC also reminds y'all is not the only Latinx person. There were other Latinx people who were speaking. There were First Nations people that were speaking. I thought it was it was very diverse, but I think it missed the mark. And I think maybe giving AOC something else to do because they set themselves up for that moment of people being like,
yeah, cool. I can see that. I think that she's, especially for a younger demographic, she's so highly visible that it could have looked like a snub, even if, like, as I've said in the past, she's a bit of an anomaly because someone like her doesn't usually exist.
She's only been in Congress she's had, what, one term? One full term? One full term. She's had one full term, right? 2018?
Yes, she was 2 years. So it's a little like, you know, she would have gotten a keynote in the past, but I think Stacey Abrams would have gotten that keynote in the past because that's a little more the kind of Obama a position that he was in 04 kind of thing. And remember the keynote
Julian Castro, was more, one of those years, right?
Yes, in, I think, 12.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
So everybody calm down, stop looking for drama. We're trying to unify. It. And it's just, you know, it's too interesting too. I forget what night, like, it really warmed my heart seeing any of the Democratic primary folks who were seeking the nomination. Mm-hmm. Even seeing Pete Buttigieg, who wasn't my guy, but I had to take a step back and be like, oh my God, an openly gay man who ran for president is speaking at the Democratic convention. Holy fuck.
And one Iowa.
Like, that's can crazy. We take a pause in the moment? That was not the case even 4 years ago. Like,
yeah, exactly.
Wow. Like, when we're talking about progress comes in many different ways and formats. And I come from, like, I went to hippie school, UC Santa Cruz. I have progress blood running. I took a test recently to make sure what my ideology was. I am fucking progressive, okay? I got the receipts. Let's go. Part of being progressive, though, is being able to... The heart of progressivism to me is love. Love is the root of what it is that we're talking about. And so there's an openness to being able to... It's not so much like just fighting like, oh, my way, my things. But taking a step back and being able to look at the historic nature of things, right? And seeing the many facets that progress is going. And man, it's happening. There were conversations around... They mentioned white supremacy. That wasn't mentioned 4 years ago. The language that's happening, like, holy fuck... We're pushing the party to the left.
Danica Roem, who's a transgender woman who is in the Virginia State Senate, who also was featured in one of the Democrat videos in the DNC, also has a really interesting, beautiful post about that Joe Biden was one of the only mainstream candidates that endorsed her and actively came out to support her. And she was able to speak to his character, not only in the video, but also in a Facebook post that she wrote. So things are happening. Progress is happening.
Yes. Yes.
So this is the night that, you know, we had Colin Powell spoke, Cindy McCain not spoke. They gave a little blurb. Let's call it what it is.
Bill, they endorsed Joe.
Yeah, and they endorsed Joe. Bill Clinton, I will say Bill Clinton was probably one person that I probably didn't need to necessarily hear from. Is it because he's a former sitting president?
Yeah.
Okay.
He was a two-term president. I mean, like, that's probably an open invitation.
Sure.
That's kind of one that you can't snub him.
Yeah.
At this point, so it's a matter of if he wants to speak, he gets to speak.
It was just 5 minutes. Sidebar, on the other side, there are no former presidents speaking at the Republican convention.
None.
Not at all.
I mean, there's only, like, I guess only one, only BW, but there's also almost no people who worked with him.
Yeah. Yeah, totally.
So like, everyone. Like, there is no dignitaries of the party.
Even Mitch McConnell's like, oh, I can't make it. And it's Zoom. It's through Zoom. Couldn't pre-record anything? Okay, that tells you something. The story of A.D. Barkin, he had ALS. He was the guy who had ALS. Mm-hmm. You see sort of his progression. To me, that was a moment of that's who I'm fighting for. People's healthcare, it's on the line. I know a lot of people are, I want Medicare for all as well, but also most importantly is I want everyone to be able to be covered. And underneath the Joe Biden presidency, we're going to look into expanding that coverage, having a public option, lowering the price of drugs. Trump has got to dismantle it and continue to dismantle it. So when you see those people who, you know, whose healthcare is on the line, like, that's who I'm fighting for.
And let's put this in more policy terms. The two platforms right now are rip away ACA, dismantle it, and go back to not having protections. Kids are not cannot stay on their parents' plan until 26. You are not banned from pre-existing conditions. Don't listen to Trump. That's nonsense. So he's going to save that. He won't. Because they can't make the math work if you don't have the mandate. So Trump is trying to rip away the ACA, rip away healthcare from 20 million people, then versus a public option.
Right. And so
if you want Medicare for all, I do not think a public option is a terrible place to move to next.
100%.
That's actually a wonderful place that once, because what look what happened to the ACA. 10 years later, people, 59% of the country, have a favorable rating for it. If you give them a public option, maybe 10 years from now, we can go to something even bigger.
Totally.
And we can go to a single payer. Yeah. But, and it's not just, and I'm not, this isn't going into the primary, primary's over, but I'm saying if the position is a single payer, I'll tell you what, dismantling the ACA does not get us there.
Nope. And I want to point this out. I think there's something, again, I'm going to dub myself as a pragmatic progressive with dreams. I got big dreams, mm-hmm. but I'm very pragmatic about it. Because let's be honest, here in California, we have Kaiser. It's this huge medical industry. The insurance companies are not going to disappear overnight. We have to, like, find our stepping stones because we're talking about a $1 billion industry. We're not going to flip a light switch and be like, oh, sorry, you're gone. Everything is,
And if you think that won't get pushed back.
It's going, So let's focus on how do we get everyone covered in whichever way it can go, and then we can start working on those ways and start, getting better prices for prescription drugs. Like, I think people are so focused on just the myopic their wants, and watch that video of this guy with ALS, and you're like, I'm fighting for him.
Yeah, I think that's exactly right. But you really, that's one of my things. We'll talk about this, I think, later as well. Is that when you drill down issue by issue. And for us progressives, if you drill down and you pick one issue, and if you want to say healthcare, and then you actually break down, how do you move the needle right this second? What can you do today?
Yeah.
Then it's really hard to say, this doesn't matter. Mm-hmm. And this isn't going far enough. Who cares?
Yeah.
Because that does not move the needle at all.
Yeah.
And the needle will move in the opposite direction.
Yep, totally. Especially if you just pack it up and say, oh, I'm not getting what I want. I'll stay home today.
Yep.
This ain't McDonald's. You can just get to, like, order, like, specifically what you want and get that. It's, you know, and it's a team. It's America's, like, the biggest, a group project in the world, right? We're all having to, like, collaborate. You don't always get, it's the art of collaboration. I don't just get to take over. But whoever works the hardest is going to get their things in the final project.
My favorite metaphor, I think, I use all the time is if, you know, you're at war and you're like, I think the best place for us to fight is up on that hill. I could totally win the battle if I get to that hill. Well, guess what? They're shooting you right now in the river.
Yes.
I don't care if you want to go to that hill. You're getting shot right now if you don't start shooting back.
Right. Yeah.
And that has got to be the metaphor for politics at all times.
Right.
You don't get to skip this moment to get to the next moment. So there's a matter of what can you do today?
Yeah. Potential, I'm going to speak into existence, First Lady Dr. Jill Biden.
Yes, ma'am.
Let's not miss this moment. I love a first lady who I just, you know, I love a first lady. I love a good first lady. Get Melania out of my face.
She worked as a teacher in a community college the entirety of her time as a second lady for 8 years.
Yeah.
And as already said, as a first lady, she will continue to teach in this community college. That is, and when asked about it, I should say specifically, it's not some stunt. When asked why she does that, she says, because I believe that I can really make a difference.
Yeah.
Yeah. Teaching makes a difference.
Yeah. And I'm like,
this, like, can we have any a better contrast with who we have in the White House today than these two people who have had so many reasons to get jaded and have had so much taken away from them, and still they respond with generosity compared to Trump, who has been given everything and responds with greed.
Yeah. Yeah, and you just made me think of something when, I forget, someone was talking, we're getting to the next night, but, you know, Obama talks about, like, if anybody had reasons to get...
Let's get to the next night. We're there.
We're
finally going to, we're like, on hour four, we're doing it in real time. We're like basically just live tweeting on a podcast. We're going to take as long as the actual 8 hours it took to do it.
I will say, though, education-wise, like, having someone who cares about education, we don't have that right now in the administration at all, not even the Secretary of Education. And I like...
Has ever worked in education.
Yeah.
And yet, exactly. Maybe having a teacher that's a first lady. Or first lady that's a teacher.
And I just, like, I don't want to miss this moment. So, like, just the idea of having a first lady, Dr. Jill Biden first lady, like, we can't miss this moment. Night three, Kerry Washington's hosting...
Yep.
And I called it, and she just was like, I think every host did a great job, and I think they brought their own flavor, but Kerry Washington had this beautiful urgency about her the entire night. She was giving me my Olivia Pope realness that I needed.
This was like the night of all nights. This was like must-see TV. This was like, who? Who's on? And who? Oh, and her? And her.
I could,
and her.
Yes.
And her.
Okay. Hillary Clinton, Gabrielle Gifford, Elizabeth Warren, Barack Obama, Kamala Harris, like, it was just like Nancy Pelosi. It was just a powerhouse night. Snaps to Elizabeth Warren, because, like, she's always the one to, like, she's an educator too, always making us have a little homework. And our homework was to find the Blue's Clues Black Lives Matter in the background. Yes. In the little letters. Yes. I was like, and again, like, so unheard of, because that 4 years ago it was even kind of taboo to even, like, it was such a buzzwordy sort of thing, Black Lives Matter, right?
Yep.
And everybody has come out. It's part of the platform and the mission and the conversation of what it is that we are doing here.
And also this is, again, zooming out context. It does not mean the work is done.
Yeah.
But that we have a presidential candidate and a vice president in Biden and Harris that will say the words Black Lives Matter.
Yeah.
Contrast that, of course, with Trump, who will never say that.
Yeah.
But contrast that with Trump today in North Carolina, was at a rally and a man yelled out monkey when he mentioned Obama. And Trump turns to him and chuckles and says, "Now be nice. Let's be nice."
No.
And then says, and then chuckles about it.
Yeah.
Let's go back to context here.
Right.
Zoom out context. This is not just a game of, oh, Trump is awful, but context of where we are moving on the progressive spectrum, and that our leaders are now, the activism has made room for the politicians to move into that space.
Yeah.
That's the point of activism.
Right. Yeah.
Is to give them the room to then act on the way you want them to act.
Yeah, totally. And contrast it to, just even take a step further, like, I'm, again, look forward to having Republicans that I can debate issues with again, because even there was a baseline where John McCain stopped the woman who was like, he's a terrorist, and he took the microphone away from her. It was like, that's not true. And, you know, there's a certain base level to be able to be at.
That's exactly right.
Okay, so I enjoyed Hillary Clinton's speech. I listened to her audiobook. I have a newfound respect, love, and appreciation for her. I live tweeted Ben Randall my reactions to the book, like, for 2 months when I was listening to it, making you relive the whole experience.
And I was like, "Don't do this to me. I read this book 2 years ago."
I'm like, "Oh, Ben, did you know?" You're like, "Yes,
Too soon.
Okay, I thought the setup of having, on so many levels, worked so well of having Obama and then Kamala Harris go. I thought...
Did you know he was supposed to close the night?
Oh.
That was at his request.
Yes.
That Kamala go after him.
Yes. Because
he wanted it to be a passing of the torch.
Love him.
Isn't that just like, isn't that Obama?
Yes.
To be like,
to be like,
this ain't about me. Yes. This is about the party. This is about moving forward in the future. She needs that.
And because it's a tough act to follow. He is a tough act, so I get it. But I thought it was such a good, because Kamala Harris, she is sort of, she's.
Kamala.
Kamala. What am I saying? It's like Kama.
Kamala. You just put the emphasis on the second syllable, and it's on the first.
Okay.
Kamala.
I need to know because it's our vice president.
Yeah.
So that's like when I was canvassing for Barack Obama in 2008. I was assistant campaign director for the DNC in 2008 in Seattle. But there was one person we were training. She could not say Barack Obama. She was like, Barack Obama. She just kept adding
that's a testament to... People can learn.
That's how to true. Say yes.
His name and her name. It'll happen.
Yes. Give us time. So, but like she is usually, I mean, she is the one who is trying the case against Trump, right? And we've seen her grill Bill Barr. She is a powerhouse, right? What I thought was nice is that Obama got to deliver more so of the powerhouse.
Yes, yes.
And we got to just meet her and see her. Was she, because I love, like, she has a beautiful laugh. She's so. I want to just hang out with her and hug her and just
this
love
was,
her.
This, like, was happy war, this was Happy Warrior Kamala,
yeah,
where she was introducing herself. Mm-hmm. And you are right that obviously this stuff is planned, and obviously they had known what President Obama wanted to say, even though his speech was live. Of course, they probably conferred and like and they knew the ground that he wanted to cover was to point out that Trump is not rising into his job.
Yeah.
And he is not, and as he said, he isn't because he can't.
Right.
And also, in addition to that, he is a threat to democracy at this point. Mm-hmm. And that we need to be very clear about what's happening right now, that this is our job to save our democracy, and that we cannot assume that in 4 years there will be one waiting at the end of it. And you are right that he clearly was the attack dog. I kind of bristle at the notion that his speech was the most... angry, whatever, towards us of sitting. No, that I think the point was he was being serious because he was saying, like, you know, again, that Maya Angelou quote, when someone shows you who they are, believe them the first time.
Yeah.
And so that was that he was just pointing out that all the ways in which he is creeping towards authoritarianism.
Yeah.
Believe him.
Yeah.
Believe him. He is a threat to democracy. He needs to get out. And that you're right. That gave space then for Kamala to just introduce herself to people. We forget that. Half the country doesn't know who she is.
Right.
So this is just her chance to say, so to us, some of us, we're like, you know, we know that, mm-hmm. We don't need to hear about you being a mom. But
Mamala.
To a lot of people, they don't know that.
Right.
And they're like, oh, does she have skep kids? I don't understand. Mm-hmm. Oh, okay.
Yeah.
They just don't know her. So she has a chance to say, this is who I am. This is what I believe. This is my story. This is my mother. And this is how she raised us, and so on and so forth.
And there was something too about, I was thinking, like, who is this convention for? And again, there was people who don't know her, and it gave them an opportunity to get to know her. And I think this ticket in general, for just talking politics, has such an opportunity to recapture some of those Obama-Trump voters. Because that the ticket has that very similar makeup of, it's the inverse of what we saw for Obama Biden, right? It's there's a similarness to it.
It's the suburbs that we have to remember that we lost 2016. We lost the suburbs by 4.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's right. And in 2018, we won back the House with the suburbs.
Right.
So it's now the suburbs are not. They're not actually the racist, misogynistic view that the president has with a bunch of lily white housewives.
That's not them.
In fact,
they were out there protesting. Like, the suburbs are,
correct.
They don't like.
They're also more diverse.
Yes, true.
The millennials are now living in suburbs.
We're there.
With children.
So
they're actually, they have diversified. They don't like this, the incompetence and the corruption and the cruelty. And so we're now currently doing well in the suburbs, but let's be clear, Biden and Harris know that they need to continue to do well there.
Yeah.
And that's also why you're suddenly hearing all this, like, it's not out of thin air that you're hearing all this talk about, like, oh my God, the cities are so violent. Well, oh my God, the all that violence is going to come out to your neighborhoods. Be very, very, very skeptical of that language, because that's being created. That's some Richard Nixon Law and Order bullshit. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
That's just coded racism.
Yep.
To be like, watch out, those black people are coming for your suburbs. Like,
listen,
don't.
We're already there. I grew up in the fucking suburbs. So look to your left, look to your right. We already there, bitches. Correct. And we're making your neighborhoods better. And yes. Yeah. And I love Kamala Harris's line of there is no vaccine for racism. We have to put mm-hmm. in the work. And her line, I did not like the camera. Like, no, we're not talking technicals.
Oh,
I know the camera angles for her speech. Because there's a line when she goes, I know a predator when I see one. I needed that straight to camera.
Profile. So I have two thoughts on this. Okay, so we're just quick theater criticism. First of all, jumping ahead, I will say that they clearly learned from her night on the second with Biden's speech, because Biden's speech was nailed it in the same exact room that she was in. And so I completely agree that the angles that they had, the sweeping camera motions, catching spaced out reporters on their laptops, was like just crap.
Yeah.
And I so agree that it undermined her, because then she couldn't play to the room.
Right.
She couldn't play to the camera.
Right.
It was just weird in between. But I will say this. She is such a good speaker that she still killed
that speech.
A speech that was trying actively to undermine her.
They were like doing experimental theater. They're like, well, let's try this and I'll swoop in over here.
We'll swoop around and show a crowd that's not even here. And then we'll come in on this angle.
Will this be fun?
We'll go to this side. So the fact that she still landed that speech, I think, was a testament to. And it was hard, because I think had that speech been delivered in a hall, she would have brought
the house down. Yeah.
So I actually think, I do admit it was a kind of a neutral one. I don't think it will be a speech for the ages.
Right.
I think because it was kind of undermining her at every turn.
Yeah.
But the good news is they clearly learned the next night.
By the next night, they're like, okay, great. Don't do any of that.
Don't do that.
We just need a shot. We just need to hear a speech. Because also, too, all these speeches have this sort of fireside chat, mm-hmm. intimate thing. Mm-hmm. And I actually think, like, I like that the speeches aren't written for, like, audience applause lines. It was connecting to us. And I think, again, that's a note for the future of maybe there are like one speech at the end of the night has that big sort of rallying speech, but I think there's room for speeches that are more, let's just have a conversation, you and I. Okay, night four. One of the things I really loved so much was Cory Booker dubbed it as like the Survivor jury hall of
I loved that sequence.
Can we get more of those from here?
Of all the former primary candidates all
yes.
hanging out, chatting, joking with each other, and also talking about how wonderful Joe was.
Yes, totally.
And the story that Cory Booker told about during the debate, during a section when Cory was leaning into Biden and like kind of really attacking him, that Biden during the commercial break turned to him and said, like, keep it up.
Yes. Yes.
And let's not forget, because I remember this last night when I watched the ABC interview with Biden and Kamala, and they brought up twice.
Oh God, when she
the moment in the debate.
Yeah.
And she brilliantly swatted it away both times. But
twice.
Let's think about this. That is who Biden is.
Right.
The fact that he didn't just overlook that Cory Booker took a swipe at him. He didn't just overlook that Kamala went after him during the debate. He, in both instances, went, you're a leader.
Yes. How do I build that up? And that's what real leaders do. That's what real leaders do. Again, I'm not maybe going to agree with everything that you're saying, but I'm going to challenge you. I'm going to step up to you. And at the end of the day, we're on the same side here. And I think what we forget is they debate and they fight, but they're still colleagues, and they're still they love and appreciate each other more than we do. Like, we have more, like, the individual, supporters have more venom for each other than the actual candidates do. Bernie Sanders easily came out and was like, all right, let's do that. Like, his speech, I thought, was really great. It was a rallying cry. He's said, I'll work with progressives, moderates, Republicans, conservatives. Like, he is trying to build the best America that he can. And so I think We need to get out of our ideas of tribalism, us versus them, because that's how we got ourselves here. Only people that benefit from that is Russia. Russia is actively trying to dismantle Correct. Our democracy and get us to hate each other to the point where we can't stand each other. And so we Correct. Need to be able to find common ground, meet people where they are, but don't leave them there. But you have to find a way to meet people where they are. But yes, I love that, like, the Democratic candidates roundtable discussion. It was just sort of like, I love Cory Booker asking to Bernie Sanders, hey, why does my girlfriend love you more than she loves me in terms of politics? His girlfriend being Rosario Dawson, who could have been the first girlfriend. It just, we had a great primary. We had a beautiful primary. When we look at it, I said from day one, I love that there were all those candidates on that stage because that's what it's supposed to be. I think in years past, it's been just the three people that, like, no, it's a democracy. Anybody can run if they meet those three criterias, go mm-hmm. for it. And let's have a conversation. I think the reason why we have, you go to Joe Biden's website of all the different the party platform is so huge and the policies and the agenda is so huge because we had so many conversations. If one candidate has to talk about reparations, they all have to have an idea and thought about reparations, right? Like, and so there's so many issues that we are, that they're listening to and that they're taking a part of the agenda because we had a great primary and I'm appreciative yep. to like everybody that ran and was a part of it. And here we are, let's go.
And that's exactly right. And that's the point of the primary. And it's also, that's what you saw modeled in Biden choosing Kamala mm-hmm. and that moment that Cory Booker shared in that Biden recognizing that dissent and disagreement is the point.
Right.
He wants people around him who disagree with him mm-hmm. so that he can learn and we can come to it, have a better solution. That is true leadership, yeah. to be unafraid of information that's contradictory to you,
yep.
because that may have the answer in it.
Yep.
So that's, I think, should, especially progressives, but everyone should take heart in that,
yeah.
that Biden's not walking into office saying he knows everything and that he's going to lord over you. He understands that he is then leading a country and leading a party that is not in complete agreement.
Yeah. And you've seen, I think they did such a great job painting the picture about how much he is ready for this moment, not only in that instance, but seeing his work with Ebola, just like all the yeah. different, you've seen, like, he understands getting people together. He just understands how the job works. He's not a king. He is a public servant. And yep. he's listening to the people. And Tammy Duckworth, like, I need her as president one day. Like, I just, she deserves, like, she's fought for this country. She is just a powerhouse. Love her. Called him the coward in chief.
Yep.
He has no right leading our troops. What did you think about the Julie Louis Dreyfus?
That was fabulous.
I thought it was perfect for night four. Because, like, it was
correct.
Like,
you couldn't have that in one or two.
No.
She was clearly doing a twist on the previous three nights of it.
Yes.
But that's really hard to land that kind of comedy.
Only like she could do it.
Only her. To do that, like, I'm delivering, I'm hosting this event, and I'm doing all of this straight-faced with a room with no people in it, and these are all pre-written jokes, and every single one is landing.
Yes.
That is really hard.
Yes, it was so meta, because, like, she, also knowing that she was on Veep, and, like, it's yes. sort of like you said, it only works for night four because it's sort of disrupting the expectations of what we know had already happened. Yes. And also just like the reality of the situation that's happening. I think her like not like calling Mika Penance, like Mike Pence isn't really from here from America. Like just, it was just, I thought she did such a great job. And I think I needed that levity because my heart.
I forgot about that. Because yeah. he can't pronounce Kamala. Yeah.
Yeah. yeah. I think like I needed that. Like it has been such an emotional four days. And honestly, speaking of the emotions, well, before I get to that, I do want to say, I want the Currys to have their own reality show.
Right? That was, I was in heaven watching that.
I'm going to start watching basketball now because I love Stephen Curry. I love Steph Curry. Like
I just was like, this beautiful family and those adorable kids. I was in love.
They just let the tape roll and whatever was going to happen was going to happen. It was just...
I loved it.
I was dead. But so I'm watching night four and I'm also I'm working out as night four is happening because that's how I've been able to squeeze in the workout for the day. And Joe Biden, they're like, and now here's Joe Biden. And
we all held our breath.
The lights were like, it was like, he hadn't even said a word. And I stopped working out. I looked at the screen and the lights came up on him. I started bawling. He hadn't even said a word, Ben Randall. Yeah. And so I started bawling, like ugly Viola Davis crying. It was nasty. And what I realized, I didn't realize how much pain I had been in for four years. I didn't realize how much pain I had been in 4 years. And he represents light at the end of the tunnel. And and not that, like you said, not like, oh, the job is done, but we can then, the real work can finally begin. And scared I am, right? It just, all of my anxieties. And I think we've all been just doing the best that we can to push forward. This is some scary shit. I talk to people who are in their 60s, who have seen a lot. I mean, listen, when has America just ever been great or been perfect? But they're like, this is as bad as they've ever witnessed it.
Yes, and this is happening on his watch, and we don't have a president. We don't have a leader. There's none of men trying to guide us, or a woman. But there's no one trying to guide us through this. We have a person who just rage tweets while he watches Fox News and acts like he has no responsibility to fix everything, but he deserves full credit for everything.
Yeah.
So it's, I was watching the Biden speech, and not only did he just kill it, but I thought that it was, he delivered it. And this, I think, is the strategy for the whole campaign. The reason why there was a virtual convention and they didn't push the rules, for instance, is that it basically was a presidential address.
Yeah.
He was talking to you like a president, and he was saying, we're going to get through this. And he was modeling the behavior that he knows that we all desperately need right now. And I thought he killed it. I think he knocked it out of the park.
Yeah.
I was emotional too.
And you seeing all the videos, like you said, like he's already stepping into the role. He's, you know, we're sitting behind the scenes, him having briefings and the people that he's meeting with. He's having his briefings. He's doing all these, you know, we're already seeing that he is being presidential. We're already seeing him step up and to meet the moment. I thought some of it, like he said, you know, I will draw on the best of us, not the worst of us. I will be an ally of the light, not of the darkness. And with passion and purpose, let us begin, you and I together, one nation under God, united for love for America, united for love for each other. For love is more powerful than hate. Hope is more powerful than fear. Light is more powerful than dark. And you know what? The Republicans and the Russians have done such a great job of setting the bar so low.
Yes.
And he killed it anyways. But I thought also, like, setting up the video of the little kid, what was it, Braden Harrington?
Braden, yeah.
With the stutter.
And did you see, I think the next day, Braden was interviewed, and he now wants to coach other kids who stutter. And I just thought, isn't that the ultimate testament to empathy and compassion, to see how it spreads? Because we've had 4 years of cruelty and corruption, and we've seen how that spreads.
Yeah. Yeah. The opposite. And isn't that what we want? Because I don't need a leader that I agree with everything or want to have a beer with, but I need someone that, like, can step up to the moment and listen and lead and inspire when necessary, and who we can, you know, work with. And I just was really moved, just Joe Biden's story, how much I think he's the right person for the moment, 110%. He knows trauma. He knows tragedy. He's lost, you know, his wife, children, and he understands empathy. And I think that that's what the country, when the country is hurting, we need empathy. And the other guy doesn't have, he's a sociopath, so he's not capable of empathy.
By 200, I mean, by the time January comes around, 2021, probably 200,000 people will be dead. 200,000 Americans will be dead. That is a moment to have a president who is hardwired for nonstop empathy.
Yeah.
That's what we need at that moment to unite us. You're right, electing a psychopath to lead us out of that is insanity. And not to mention, I think the things I come back to, and maybe this is getting a little bit into like next step action items, is what I've been saying to people moving forward is everyone's kind of thing, hoping for some kind of vaccine or some treatment or something that's going to, you know, lift us out of this. And I go, well, think about this for 2 seconds. The dreamest dream that we have, and this is not me being dour, but the dreamest dream that we could have is that Biden is elected. He takes over in January. At some point in that winter, a vaccine is found. Then we're so lucky because then a Biden administration can effectively begin the process of testing and deploying that vaccine, which will take months.
Yeah.
So we're looking at, if Biden is elected, another at least 9 months of this, if not a full year.
Yeah.
Now, if Trump is reelected, do you trust, because he's already said that he will not put the vaccine through the same process through the FDA, that it will be deemed safe by his White House and his team of experts that he has assembled.
Right.
Do you trust A, Trump to judge whether or not a vaccine is safe? Do you trust Trump's judgment and guidance and executive ability on that call? B, do you trust Trump to distribute 300 million vaccines? A massive, massive organizational challenge.
Not at all.
I truly do believe this. If Trump is reelected, we are not coming out of this hole for years.
Because
he's going to just farm it off to the states.
Yeah.
The states are going to do whatever they can do. Some will do well. Some will not do well. We're watching to see how that happens right now.
Yeah.
So I kind of frame it in that context of like, this is the actual moment that we're in. And if we want a way out, we can't just hope that, oh, a vaccine will be created and Fauci's going to distribute to everybody and we'll all be fine. We'll pick up at Walgreens and we're all good. That is not how it's going to go.
No.
Yeah. Yes.
Well, yeah. And I think to me, again, when I think about like when I think about what is the purpose of, you know, the convention, I think there's many a fold. I think one, hopefully it's going to activate Democrats and the base to not only vote, but like actively engage, which we're going to
organize,
get engaged, whatever you're...
Let's get to that. Let's get to the next steps.
There's nothing quite like sailing in the calm international waters on my ship, the SS Biopic.
Avast! It's actually pronounced biopic.
No, you dingus! It's biopic!
Who the hell says that? It's biopic.
Because it's the words for biography and picture.
All right, that is enough. Ahoy, I'm Dave Holmes. I am the host of the rebooted podcast formerly known as International Waters, designed to resolve petty but persistent arguments like this. How? By pitting two teams of opinionated comedians against each other with trivia and improv games, of course. Winner takes home the right to be right.
What podcast be this?
It's called Troubled Waters, where we disagree to disagree.
So now, what do we do now? And so I think, like, again, it's like all hands on deck. Alarm bells are ringing. I think a good point to start to check in first is, like, what is it that you, looking back in 2016, are like, I could have done this. I wish I could have done that. I know that I worked for the 2008 campaign. I didn't do anything. I maybe donated for, you know, for the Hillary Clinton and some of the Democrats. I dragged my feet. It wasn't until the convention that I was like, okay, because it was a good convention last year. I heard her speech and I was like, all right, let's go. And I think that's what conventions do. They're hopefully motivate and get you involved. I didn't make any phone calls. I didn't do anything. So I think taking a moral inventory of like, what did you not do last time that you yourself can do? Because again, everyone's avenue and everyone's lane is different. Maybe yours is that you do a bake sale and you donate the money, or you do some you do some progressive activism stitches or something. Like everyone has their stitches, like, you know, like stitch crossing and not just like stitching people cross stitching.
Cross stitching, I guess.
I didn't realize it's like stitches. Like you're just going around. Yeah, maybe people are bleeding. I don't know. Stitch them up.
You stitch them up.
But I think doing a moral inventory of like what it is that your avenue. I am a huge proponent of Vote Save America's plan of adopt a state.
Yep.
Big fan. I've adopted Arizona. I've been very busy and haven't done what I've needed to do, but I'm going to now. I'm donating.
Well, you have a plan. If you go to that website, you know, to adopt a state, you can exactly. They give you the plan. They give you the training of how to either send postcards, send texts, make phone calls. We're not doing knocking on doors this time because it's a pandemic. So, though I should note that the Republicans are doing that. So we have to make sure that we are out organizing them in the other ways because we don't have that tool for us anymore.
Yeah.
Or right now.
And I think too, like, also I'm very, not everybody's able to do it. I have taken it upon myself, but I'm taking a break this week. But like, I'm actively engaged in social media. I will get into social media debates. I will bring out the facts. Not everybody has that for them, but if you are, if you do have that, and a really easy thing that you can do too, is because a lot of people, like, you know, I'm seeing a lot of, you know, white cynicism of like, oh, Joe Biden's platform, like, am I supposed to be excited about this? It stinks. And you know what I did to that? I just copy and pasted a few points from Joe Biden's platform that I thought were very progressive. And I'm like, oh, you can't get behind these. You can't get behind the John Lewis Voting Rights Act. There's something for everybody. It might not be perfect, but there is something for everybody to get behind. So I'm taking it upon myself that every day, because the platform, his policies are extensive. So I'm taking it a point to, like, every day, and taking a break from social media this week because I'm on staycation. But when I get back in action, I'm going to post every day a little fun fact about the Joe Biden policy, because I think not enough things were, because Hillary Clinton also had an extensive policy and platform, but nobody knew what it was. And so I think it's our job to get that information out there, because it's not, to me, it's not just a referendum against Trump. We have an opportunity for real change and for real say as we're moving towards the future. So let's get people excited about what the possibilities are here.
That is exactly right. And I often say, when it comes to the presidential race, if you really truly feel like there's no possible way that you can be pro a Biden-Harris ticket on social media, that just feels an absolute possibility to me, which, I love your strategy of emphasizing parts of the platform that they can actually get behind. But if that is truly the case, adopt a Senate race.
Yeah.
We need the Senate. Nothing happens without, if we don't take back the Senate. And we can do that. For instance, I'm donating $5 to, like, I don't know, I've got like 5 or 6 or 7. I don't know. I don't remember right now, but the count is Senate races that are just recurring donations. $5. It's like $30 a month or something I'm giving spread across a bunch of different races. That goes a really long way in a Senate race.
Yeah.
A really long way. And so if you can diversify and pick between 5 and 10, 2, 3, 1 Senate race to give to, we need to get back to the majority, because a Biden presidency without a Senate it's not meaningless, but we really need that Senate. And if we're progressive, we need the Senate.
Yeah.
There's not going to be some magical progressive Senate. Like, we still have to work with, we will still have Joe Manchin in our caucus. Mm-hmm. West Virginia ain't getting a progressive senator. Mm-hmm. That's as blue as that state is gonna go in that seat. So we need to be just building the amount of blue in that Senate. And that is how we'll start making progress on all of these things.
Yeah.
So it's like, fight where you can in every way you can.
Yeah. Like, I like that, because you can find, like you said, if you can't get behind Joe Biden, there is a senator out there who needs your passion, your energy. Yep. Like, no one gets to just pack this in. And what I've realized, and it's interesting, this, I think, has been my year. I've always been, you know, politically active and engaged. But this was the year that really, I feel like I had, like, an adult awakening. And for one, like, understanding how politics really works. Like you said, like, it's it was founded on compromise. My people were part of the first 3/5 compromise, everybody. Yep. Not far from ideal, but it was a starting off point to be able to then fucking work from, right? And so we're looking for those compromises and collaborations, but also to, like, us as, like, citizens, we have to be actively engaged in the system. This is a commitment. We right now have to make a lifelong commitment to democracy, equality, and freedom. John Lewis said it is a journey, not a destination. And so we have to have that same fight. Like, John Lewis's death has really inspired me. The torch has been passed. It is in our hands. And in some ways, it's actually, I mean, this is a really terrible year that's happening, but, like, at least, I don't know, we still have Netflix to be able to, like, you know, relax with for a moment to catch our breath. Like, you know, Martin Luther King Jr. didn't have that. Like, the work ethic that they had, it was relentless. And so if we each take a bit of this weight, it doesn't have to feel so heavy. And also, too, on a larger scale level, the weight of the world, I'm going to put this pressure on, is actually on our fucking shoulders. Like, the weight of the world is on our shoulders. For better or worse, America is a superpower in this, in the world. And we need, the world needs us to get our shit together so we can lead the charge on, if we had, you know, someone like Biden in place that could do what they did with Ebola, this coronavirus could have been taken care of in a much. We could have sent people to where we needed to be to try to contain it in certain areas.
Yes.
And the world's going to need us to be able to do that, to step it up with the global climate right now. Like, my state is on fire. I had five fires surrounded San Francisco. I had family who had to be evacuated. Like, we need to, like, get our shit together.
Two of the very first things that I think a Biden administration with a Democratic Senate could get through is the John Lewis Voting Rights Act, expanding voting rights. And the second thing I bet they would move on pretty quickly is climate change.
Yeah.
And so those are two radical things.
Yeah.
I mean, to make progress on climate change right now would be is decades in the making and decades long overdue. And then you add on to that voting rights, expanding franchisement to people who should have the right to vote, to protect that right to vote.
Yeah.
That is going to help us in that progressive future. If we do not get Biden, if we do not get a Democratic Senate, we will continue to have our voting rights eroded. And let's also remember, this is another, pick a reason. Just today, Mike Pence said, 4 more years of Trump is 4 more years of judges. 1/5 of all federal judges have been appointed already by Trump. 1/5.
Wow.
Now, do we need that number to go to 2/5?
Nope.
Almost half of the all federal judges? I'll tell you what. Medicare for All ain't going to last that long if half the judges in America have been appointed by Trump.
Yeah.
That gets struck down
immediately.
Quick.
Yeah.
And then if it goes to the Supreme Court and we're on a 6-3 or 7-2 conservative court, that law doesn't last. So this is what I mean, again, by, like, you want to go fight on that hill. You want to fight up on that hill. That's a good spot to fight. You think you can win on that hill? Great. You're getting shot in the river right now.
Mm-hmm.
So what? You got to win this fight in the river right now, and then we'll get to that hill.
Yes, 100%. And it's also having conversations with people who are undecided or unmotivated to vote, making sure that they are registered to vote, making sure that they are ready to vote. If we each make a commitment to getting 5 people within our circles who either didn't vote or voted for Agent Orange, what a difference. So I think it's, like, fine. I think the step one, I would say, take your moral inventory of, like, what did you not do in 2016 that you think that you can commit to now, and make a plan. Like, what are the big picture things that you think you can do? We'll link the Adopt a State program, which I think is a great start there. And then what are your weekly commitments that you can do? Do you have a daily commitment thing? Because it's like, we literally all need to take on this as, like, a part-time job.
And normalize enthusiasm.
Yeah,
I'm seeing a lot of white cynicism right now, and it's getting me livid.
Yeah,
because it feels like I'm talking, and I shouldn't be speaking ill, because maybe you're listening to this and you're feeling this way. But it is not cool to be apathetic in the face of fascism.
Nope,
and that is not we are not 14-year-olds. It is not cool to be like, I don't really care anyway. I mean, whatever, mom. That's not cool.
No.
Right? The stakes are on the line. We have strange, unmarked federal forces invading cities. We have, you know, tear gassing protesters for photo ops. It is now.
Yeah.
Fascism is here on our doorstep, and we have to beat it back and normalize enthusiasm.
Yeah.
No,
and
so
you have a
that's
lot,
one of the things I'm trying to do every time around me.
And you have a lot to be excited about. Like,
yes.
we still live in a democracy. How cool is that? We don't have a king. We don't even have a parliament. We have a full-blown democracy, and it requires your participation in it. And you get to have a participation in it. You get to have a say. That is unheard of in a lot of countries, and even in a lot of different time periods. What a gift. And I roll my eyes so far to the back of my head that it looks like I'm going to pass out, or I'm the exorcist when I see white cynicism, because I'm like, I'm sorry, what the hell do you have to be cynical about? Barack Obama stated this, the people that should have or could have been cynical, like John Lewis or even Harriet fucking Tubman, and you over here with a lot of privilege and a lot of power being all cynical, get into the arena. So many people are over there just, and you know what? Or just, if you probably wouldn't be as cynical if you actually got into the fight. That's how I know you're not
correct.
Actually in the fight, because you're too busy click-clacking on your smartphone, being all cynical, and you're not doing anything. It is literally not helping anything except making our jobs harder, because it hurts us. Those of us who are in the fight, those of us who are you know, who stand a lot to lose, who are queer, who are POC, we have to read what it is that you're saying, and it hurts, and it takes the wind out of our sails. Our jobs are hard enough with having to go against Russia and the Republicans, and now we have to fight people on our own party, our own side, who claim they were marching out in the streets with us with Black Lives Matter. George Floyd's family has come out in full support of Joe Biden and Kamala Harris. So how are you not? What makes you so special? If Angela Davis can come out.
Yeah, I was like, you are not more woke than Angela Davis.
Thank you.
I'm sorry.
You're not.
You're going to win that fight. So go listen to her talk about it.
Yes.
If you need to get excited, fine. If you don't want to go Google a Biden speech, go Google Angela Davis talk. Dr. Angela Davis talking about Biden. That will get you excited.
Yeah, because I guarantee she's done more for the movement and Black liberation than you have. So you can get into this. You can suck it up with your, you know, and with great power comes great responsibility.
It's
not just suck up.
It's a yes and. It's a yes and.
You're right. Yeah.
It's a first organize, get Biden in, push him. Help get a Democratic Senate, push them. You keep pushing, you keep pushing, you keep pushing. It's a yes and. It's Obama was saying, yes, we can.
Yeah.
He was not saying, yes, we can't elect me. That was not what he was saying. Yeah. Too many people heard that.
Yeah.
Too many people said, oh my God, this amazing guy, he's our savior. And he was like, that was not what I said. I literally said, yes, we can. Yeah. Democracy is not a spectator sport. Get in the game.
Yeah.
Get in the game. The game is happening right now. And if you think... my land of many of metaphors.
Is it a football one?
Like if you think you're going to win the tournament, but you're sitting this game out,
you're
not winning the tournament.
No. Tournament's about to eventually be shut down.
Yes. Yeah. The game is being played right now, and you may lose it before the next. You may be kicked out of the playoffs before you get to the next game. So like we can't act like there's going to be 15 more games to make up our total.
Yep.
I don't know what this metaphor is doing.
Well,
but, like, you get it.
You know what I'm hearing? Get in the fucking game. Get in the fight. That's what it is. Find your lane. Oh, man. Ben Randall, this was so great to have you come. We knew this was coming. I was like, well, election's going to be heating up. Ben Randall's going to come back. And
here
I was like,
go.
I need Ben.
And it's going to get uglier. Get ready.
It's going to get worse.
Trump is going to throw the full weight of the federal government at this race. And there's a reason why there's not a term for an ex-dictator. So... he's going to use the post office was just the beginning.
Yep.
He will do everything. So get ready. That's why we can't be fighting each other right now or act like we don't need to defend this ticket because just get ready. October is going to be a shit show.
Yep. But mark your calendar October 7th because Kamala Harris versus Mika Pence.
Ooh,
Penance?
Mika Pence. Penance?
I'm not sure. It doesn't sound American to me. check Mika's birth certificates. But I'm looking forward to it. October 7th will be so great. Again, do what y'all got to do. Voting is not enough. You have to be doing other things as well. Find your lane. And we're going to do this. Be inspired. We're going to do this because we have no options. It's literally vote, elect, or die. That's legit.
Correct. Thank you for having me on.
Thanks, Ben Randall. Well, there you have it. We watched the DNC, and not that you didn't have to, but just in case you didn't miss it and needed a chance to debrief, recap, and I hope you are motivated and inspired to move into the general election. It's game time. As the Stephen Colbert Show pointed out, this is our end game. Wow. Stark, scary, inspiring. I don't know. All the things. If you're scared, do more work. That's what I keep telling myself. Get into the arena. That's going to do it for us today. One point out. Oh, I think I said the wrong thing that woman said to John McCain. She was like, oh, about Obama. She's like, oh, he's a terrorist. No, what she said is that he's a Muslim and that he wasn't born here. And neither of those were true. Not that it would matter if he was a Muslim. Anyways, that was what the line that the woman said. That's going to do it for us today. Catch us on social media as we're going to get out of here because it's a lot of episode. So we'll have our Minority Corner Rewind happening this Friday, changing up the schedule for this week. And thank you all for listening to Minority Corner. Stay active, stay engaged. I love you. Be well. So many things. Thank you for listening to Minority Corner because together we are the majority. Love y'all.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned.
Audience supported.